As a leader in the grief space, I've cared for and supported families and communities for over 20 years. This show dives into the journey and experiences all of us will most certainly encounter in life. Welcome to the Guiding Grief Podcast, where we discuss grief and explore opportunities for growth and connection. I'm your host, Nicholas Welsenbach, and this is Guiding Grief on KCAT TV. Welcome to the Guiding Grief Podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Welsenbach. I am so excited to bring Guiding Grief to the KCAT platform so that we can reach out to our community, share about things that are part of all of our life, which is grief. And we started this podcast years ago with Ryan Wright, a friend of mine and a friend to everyone that he's met. And we're bringing it back to KCAT, and I wanted to take an opportunity to start that with my friend Ryan Wright. Mm-hmm. Ryan, welcome. I'm so excited to have you today. How have you been?
Thank you. Great, man. It's wonderful to be here, and I'm doing well, and exciting to be a part of this and the relaunch and make this happen again. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember bringing it the first time we had a conversation, and folks in the room and ourselves just you maybe fight back a little bit of the tears as we were talking about some emotional things that you've experienced in the past and folks that you've helped. And today we want to, as we're guiding grief, talk about the intersection of grief and life, talk about helping folks on the journey. So Ryan and I met at a tree lighting ceremony at Los Gatos Memorial Park years ago. And I knew the moment that Ryan arrived and I heard him speak and I'd heard of him, and he filled a tent in the middle of the winter on a cold night. You filled that space with love and positive energy. I remember it was recent for me in a loss, and all the words that you shared that day, I needed to hear, and I know everyone in that room needed to hear. And I kind of want to touch on that night and that information that you shared, because Ryan doesn't show up with a giant sheet of paper when he supports someone in this space. It's, great gray matter up top and then a massive heart. So
well, it's
you
getting
share,
grayer.
Yeah.
It's getting grayer.
I was talking about inside.
Yes.
Inside.
Okay, inside. Yes. Got inside. It. Yeah.
But about that message that night, and I know that it is one that resonates with you, but if you could touch on that, it'd be awesome.
You know, it's wild you bring that up, because I had a sheet of paper. I had all my notes prepared. On the way there that night, three words came to me. And usually I like to have a little bit more than three words. As I was driving in, and I was just thinking, and honestly, I was just praying and saying, hey, God, what do these people need to hear tonight? And I heard three words. The first one was choice. We all have choices. The second one was hope. And the third one was together. And I realized that night as we were there, those are all three things that we have. But when we get into grief, we think we don't have them, because no one chooses to have their loved one die.
Right.
No one would choose what they're going through at that time. And so we think we don't have choices. And we often think, oh, well, my loved one's gone. I've lost all hope. And because they're gone, now I feel like I'm all alone. And so we can buy into this rapid, this swift, that gets us going down river, that says we don't have any choices. We don't have any hope. We're all alone. We have anybody here. And those three things aren't true.
Right.
That because you said earlier, we all experience grief, you know.
Yeah.
I jokingly say sometimes the latest statistic tells us that one out of every one of us is going to die.
That's 100% fact.
Yeah, that death rate's been hovering at 100% for a long time. So that's going to happen. But the truth is, we all get choices. And that night was a candle lighting ceremony.
Right.
And we were all there together, and we had a candle on. And so I just felt like to say to each person there, hey, the fact that you're here is because you made a choice.
Right.
You made a choice not to isolate yourself. You made a choice to come, even if you didn't feel like coming. While you didn't choose where you're at, you did choose how you respond to where you're at.
Because we know, like, that choice, like just sometimes getting off the couch and going to a place where you know it's going to be just wrought
yes.
with emotion and feelings.
Yes.
And you're like, well, if I don't go, I don't have to feel
right.
how to feel those things.
Yeah.
I could mask them in any number of ways.
Yeah.
But I chose to show up.
But when you choose to show up, honestly, things don't happen if you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's good things that could happen if you'll just show up. And so making those choices was a big deal. And most people don't think they have hope. But I took that candle and I said, hey, that candle, just look at it as like a light at the end of the tunnel. So you have the candle because you choose to, because you chose to came, to come. You have a light because that's hope. And it's amazing how so many people feel in the initial moments like it'll never get better, or they'll say it'll never be the same. And that's true. It will never be the same. But that doesn't mean it can't get better.
Right.
And sometimes you just have to go through it. And I use in that passage, and that in that night I just talked about the fact that there's a Bible verse that says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm glad it doesn't say you walk to it, you walk through it. And you can, and hope is the fact that, hey, we can get through this. And there's so many people that will tell you, oh, I've been through that valley, and there's hope, even when it's in the darkest part of the night.
Right.
But the light's coming.
Finding hope took that chance, that challenge, that choice.
That's right.
Right? Because hopefully for that night, I mean, no pun intended with the use there, like that was the time that they were like, wait, there will be hope.
Yes.
Because sometimes just being surrounded by others, and I'm sure, I know you've done an immense amount of grief work and groups and all that, but sometimes just being there and not necessarily commiserating, but just knowing that I'm not the only person that is hurting because of loss, that this is going to bring some solace to me. And
seeing somebody that's maybe two or three steps ahead of you.
Yeah.
And watching that these people that were where you are at now have more hope today than you ever thought imaginable.
Right. The unforeseeable, right? Like I couldn't see that light no matter if it was lit.
Right.
But that night shined it. And I,
which leads to the third word.
Right.
Together. So we always get better together. It's almost impossible to think. We don't heal alone.
Yeah.
We heal with others. And when we get through crisis in our lives, crisis is what we need. We need to bear one another's burdens. We need someone that could come alongside and say, hey, that's too heavy for you right now. Let me walk alongside you and help you carry that load.
Yeah.
And being together changes everything. And the interesting thing is that's super counterintuitive. When you're hurting, when you've suffered tremendous loss, you kind of just want to be by yourself. You want to just sit at home and not have to think. And there's times for that.
Right. I'm not going to bring the group down with my presence. And more often than not, especially during the holiday seasons, it's when we need that togetherness, that opportunity to be amongst other individuals.
Yeah. Well, and the key to that is making sure you're with the right individuals.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Especially at Christmas time.
Yeah.
There are some people that can be just toxic to your grief.
Yeah.
There are some people that will not help you. And it's super important, I think, to identify who are those people in my life that are life-giving and who are the people that are life-sucking, that suck the life right out of you.
Right.
You just need to feel free. Don't be codependent. You just need to feel free to say, hey, that's not going to work for me this year.
Right.
But there's some people that you say, you will work for me. I would like to be with you, and you be intentional and get to that place where you're with them. That's where togetherness works.
I had a podcast in the past about holidays, and we worked with some folks from a local hospice. And one of the things we talked in that, which I think is valuable to revisit, is just making sure that when you show up to something within the holidays, that you have an exit plan, right?
That's like, so good. I was just thinking of that.
I'm going to go. Yeah. I'm going to be prepared, and I'm going to be willing to be engaged. And then what is your parameters for being able to speak about my loved one, my loss, my experience? And I just always hope that people ask, because I think that's a thing that is so taboo. People are like, well, I don't want to ask because I don't want them to have those feelings. And more often than not, we both know that, gosh, one, ask the question, and two, be willing to share. And you know, you can't make individuals do that.
And don't we say oftentimes, in the midst of the deepest tragedies, we will never forget? I mean, 9/11, we put banners everywhere, we will never forget. And that's kind of the reflection of our heart when someone passes away. We'll never forget them. Their life impacted us. The interesting thing is, then we move past that funeral, and we move past that initial time, and then we act like we don't remember who they were.
Yeah.
What happened to we will never forget.
Yeah.
So I think that we can remove a little bit for some folks today the taboo that if you're with someone and they've lost a loved one, they probably at the holidays would love to tell a story.
Yeah.
They would love to talk about it. And it feels awkward to us, but if we'll press into that, will help them a lot. That gives them permission to remember their loved one, permission to celebrate them even after they're gone. And that's kind of what we all want, right?
Right.
We all want to celebrate our loved one. They made a positive impact in our lives.
We didn't just have this day of celebration. We want to continue it. The great intersection that I'm so fortunate to have in life as it relates to being a funeral professional, especially in this valley, and I know you experience it as well with so many individuals coming from just various backgrounds, but there's one that just resonates with me, and that's the Mexican culture of Dia de los Muertos. Mm-hmm. And that opportunity to light that candle and tell that story and then put that photograph up.
Yeah.
And then just say, this person is here. If I don't, I mean, Coco was a fantastic movie that I remember watching with my children, you know, not stifling any tears, just knowing that I was thinking of my person and the place that I was going to put for. And if you're not familiar, it's marigolds, and it's a lot of marigolds and candles, and it's referred to as an ofrenda. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the beginning of the holiday season, which is the toughest part, right?
Yeah.
People ask about my profession, and they're like, hey, is it cyclical? Does it change? And I always let them know that the beginning of the holiday seasons is really, it's really Halloween, right?
Yeah.
That's when we get, you know, we remember our children, we remember all the things, and being with our parents and chili.
And we start family gatherings.
Yeah.
All the Thanksgiving and all of that stuff all comes in. Starbucks brings out their special mugs.
Right. Once the PSL shows up, that's when we know, like, this has happened, and then everything else starts to show up. But heading back to that choice, that hope, and that togetherness. I just love that
message.
Can
I add one thing?
Yeah.
I think that on togetherness, I mean, honestly, when we sit here at this table, you and I, we're both extroverts. So in our grief, ask for a story. You got time, we got stories.
Yeah, yeah, I can lay into it.
There are some people that are introverts, and that's like not what they want. And I would say to those folks, hey, you have permission to say, you know, that's not a comfortable topic for me. Or to just somehow graciously allow, you know, just to decline if someone were to ask, and to know you need to read the person you're with, if they want, you know, throw out a little feeler to see if they want to talk about them, and if they don't keep pressing the picture, don't keep pressing the point. Don't say, hey, Ryan and Nicholas said you should talk about this. Hey, come on. And they're like, Ryan, who's Ryan and Nicholas?
Yeah.
So, but be sensitive that everybody grieves differently, and for some people their healing process is different than the others. And we have to give everybody their own space to do their process in the way they need to do it. Because the important thing isn't how you grieve. The important thing is that you grieve. And we all grieve differently. Some are reflective. Some people are expressive. It's just a different way that we do it. And so I just want to put that out there
got to be accepting of what someone's willing to share. But also know that you should ask the question and then allow them. Maybe
Absolutely.
Even preface it. Hey, if you're not ready to share, I just want to let you know I'm thinking about your person and I want to know how you're doing.
And that exit plan that you talked about is so good because all of us can handle a certain amount. So for some people, it might just be, hey, I'm going to show up and I don't know how long I'll stay, but I've got a friend and when I give them a signal, I'll be on my way. Or I'm going to make sure I drive my own car.
Right.
So that when I need to leave, I'm not going to make an announcement. I'm just going to slip out
the old
and be gone.
Irish goodbye.
Yeah, that's it right there.
The folks that save, you know, days worth of their life by just.
Says my friend with the red beard.
So, I don't need 15 goodbyes to leave the house.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So I just think that's an awesome thing that you said. Exit plans are great. And it oftentimes gives people the courage to take the first step to go out.
Right.
Because they know there's a way to get out. And so. Perfect.
Yeah. I want to talk about the grief in groups because you support our Santa Clara Police and Fire Department.
Yes.
And
I'm the wellness coordinator.
Wellness coordinator.
Yes.
They couldn't be more fortunate. I remember when you made the transition from the church you were at longstanding, Calvary.
Bethel.
My apologies.
It's okay.
On Winchester and then going to Santa Clara. How has that been to work with individuals? And the reason I'm asking this like long-term is because one of the things I want to focus on is kind of a stoicism and machismo, and then like the ability to penetrate that and like in our universe, just getting a little bit further and being more in touch with those emotions and how important it is for a youth to be able to see that level of vulnerability.
Yeah. Well, definitely there's the machismo. There's definitely the just out of the necessity of the work that right. firefighters and police officers do, there's a necessity to always keep that professional edge. I was at a call 2 months ago where there was a juvenile that had randomly had a cardiac arrest and walked into the hospital room. The child had passed, and there's our two officers, completely professional, compassionate, very compassionate, but very professional. And it's a hard line to have to draw. And so I have found the best way to help others become more open is to make sure that I am more open. And if you want people to be vulnerable with you, well, then you'll have to go ahead and be vulnerable with them. Nobody wants to open up and be, everybody wants you to open up.
Right.
Nobody wants to be the first one.
Right.
Right. We all want to be part of a group.
Yeah.
That, hey, I want a group that's truthful and honest and
full safe space.
Yeah. Just full safe space, puts all their junk on the table, and we just can look at it and be honest. Okay. And then everyone's looking around the table like, well, you go first.
You first.
It's kind of like,
yeah.
And that's, yeah. That really is the hard place. Part.
Something we could take from that the AA and space, right? Like
absolutely.
Those individuals go in with the ability to share a story because they know it's going to help somebody else because there's
that's
a
right.
level of identification.
That's right.
But it's a really wonderful part of that community, and it does bring to light everybody else's power to share.
Yeah, and it kind of creates an environment that says, "Hey, if I'm healthy, I'll share." So like I always tell people all the time. Hey, everyone knows you're not perfect. They just wonder if you know. And
yeah,
so if we can just get into this headspace that says, I don't have to present as perfect. And as a matter of fact, if I present honestly about my flaws, about my hurts, about my pains, my hurts, my habits, my hangups, if I can be honest with those things and put those out there, it doesn't cause people to love me less. It actually causes them to love you more.
Right. Just the ability to, you know, we talk about being human, but being human is
yeah.
sharing those things and letting others know that this is okay.
Yeah. And it's a cliche, right? It's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
But it's
I do love that.
I do too. I always put that out there for people that are
yeah,
like,
yeah.
oh, that's just a cliche.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're correct,
100%.
But it's true. But it is okay to not be okay. And what's really good is it's okay to be okay with not being okay. I think that's the key, is that being flawed, being wounded, being hurt should never destroy our confidence. It should give us confidence that we can overcome, that we can lean into the problems of our life, because that's really right. That's really where we find the solution. One of the things I have to, since we're going to talk about being okay with not being okay, since sometimes in my vulnerableness, I just don't want people to know. I don't want to open up and share and disclose. And there's times that I'll live in denial of things. But I find that when I stop that and I begin to live in truth, that all of a sudden things begin to happen. When I was, a few years ago, we were whitewater rafting on the Rogue River, the wild and scenic.
Oh.
And
so
I got into this individual craft. It was a little boat. And they taught me at the very beginning, when you come into a rapid, the boat will try to go sideways on you. The water will swirl you. And you want to shoot that nose right down the right down the V that it makes.
Right.
No problem. I got that. They said, but if you get sideways, your first response when the wave hits is going to be to pull back. And if you pull back, your boat will come up. And the water will hit the bottom of your boat and it's gonna tip you over.
Right.
So don't do that. You've gotta lean into the wave. And then if you do that, the wave will hit your boat, straighten you out, and shoot you down the rapid. And that's just like our grief. That's just like our problems. That's just like our bad habits. If we pull away and try to act like they're not there, they'll probably come back and bite us.
I love that this is the way that you see the universe as it relates to the folks that you help at the Santa Clara Police and Fire
mm-hmm.
and just all the folks that you help through just the mission of being available when folks need you most. You know, every time I go out in the world, I'm always looking at every experience as it relates to my profession.
Yeah.
And I love the way that when you're out in the world, you're seeing, you know, you're noticing that this is an opportunity for me to lean in, but this has
yes.
everything to do with everything that you do professionally.
I don't think I do anything professional. I'm not good at anything. I'm not good enough at anything to be professional at it, but I try to do it personally. And I try to make everything I do personal. And so if I'm talking to an officer, or I'm talking to somebody at the scene, or I'm talking to somebody who's just lost a loved one and I'm going to help with their funeral service, it's just very personal. And professional, that's overrated. What we need to be is personal with people,
right,
and really care.
That's that human portion of actually leaning in. But do you know when something that like that happens and you're living in that moment, did that resonate with you at a campfire by the Rogue, that like, oh my gosh, or was it something that you were meeting with someone and you go, oh my gosh, I remember when they told me to lean in? When do you find moments of like that in your life that you know that it meant something more and that you could share it?
I think I realized that in the river.
Yeah.
Because you get a lot of time on the river to think, because you're all by yourself. You're floating down. There's people in boats around you, but you're not, you know, you just got a lot of, and in that moment of really kind of really telling myself, okay, here's what I have to do to not get thrown in the river, because that rapid's coming fast. We hit some fours and fives on those rapids, so they were some big ones.
Treacherous.
So I was really thinking, and then I was at that season of my life where I was doing a lot of funerals, helping a lot of people in grief, and that's when I went, oh, that doesn't just work on this river, that works in every hard situation in our life, because we're all shooting the rapids at one time or another.
Right.
We've all got to do that. And I
every, you know, day for that matter,
every
life,
day,
right?
Yeah. Lean into my insecurity, lean into my anxiety, lean into my depression, lean into my grief, lean into my fear. Just whatever it is that you're dreading, mm-hmm. lean into it and let that thing straighten you out. And it's a life lesson that works, and it's truth.
There's a great children's book, and it's I've Got a Problem, and I just every single time I think of it, I think of my father-in-law, because he would have loved the drawings, and I remember reading it to Audrey and Lachlan, our children, and it's this little boy, and he's going through, and he has a problem, and it's never defined through the book, but he keeps thinking about it, the energy that's associated with the problem. And all that happens if you're not leaning in is that this thing just grows. And
like
it grows and it grows.
Like
and it
the
grows.
Check engine light on your car.
Right. It's not getting better by not addressing
right.
it. And I just, for a child to see that, and I know that when I read this book, it was just as important for me as a dad and a human being to read this book and think about, oh my gosh, how often do I still do this where I can't manifest because all I'm seeing is the problem, and I'm not able to see the fact that if I just leaned into it, mm-hmm. if I addressed all the things appropriately.
So good.
And gosh, I wish I could remember the author, but it was What to Do with a Problem, and it was just a beautiful
book.
People
can tune into the next podcast.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. We'll let them know. It'll be in the footnotes. We're going to take a brief break. My name is Nicholas Welsenbach. I am the host of Guiding Grief. We are sitting with our friend Ryan Wright, and we will be back shortly to continue a conversation about grief and our experiences. Stay tuned. I'd like to take an opportunity and pause just to thank our sponsors, Darling Fisher and Los Gatos Memorial Park, celebrating lives one story at a time, as members of the community here in Campbell, San Jose, and Los Gatos. It has been an honor to care for so many of the loved ones of our community, and we are so grateful for your trust. That's why we're supporting this podcast, Guiding Grief, and bringing your community information about how to heal. Welcome back to the Guiding Grief podcast. We are sitting with Ryan Wright, and we're going to continue that conversation about the Stoicism and kind of machismo universe.
Yeah.
And I just want to share anecdotally just something that I remember experiencing when I was 17 with my dad. I was at my grandmother's funeral. It was the graveside, and my dad hadn't spoken at Catholic services many times. You don't eulogize there, and he had...
Right.
You know, he was notorious for like just writing longhand on the big yellow notepad. And I loved watching him do it. I loved his handwriting. I've never actually gotten to read this. I remember all of the content, but it was what he shared the day, that day at our grandmother's graveside service. And one of the things that I remember every day at work was his relationship with his grandmother's related to my experience, right? And the thing that I just loved was it was my dad was fighting back tears, and my dad was a tough, amazing, incredible dad, was there for everything. He was just such a positive part of my brother's and my sister and I's life, and just a great husband to my mom. And I remember seeing those tears, and I think he was leaning into it, but I remember how impactful it was to me to see someone I just, you know, it's like the first time you see him get hurt. I remember that time. It was a kidney stone, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's not a superhero.
right.
And then even more important was the first time that I remember seeing tears come out of his eyes, and I was just like, oh my gosh, because you know, with children, you know, crying becomes part of your life, or you just bickering and all the things that are associated with it. But as a 17-year-old young man, I just remember like it was yesterday, standing there, the words that were spoken, the way that he spoke about the timeline of his mom's life and how important she was to so many people. But it was really the tears that I can reflect back on, and not the words of the vulnerability of, you know, my superhero, my dad. And
the strength of that vulnerability.
Yeah, that's what I saw that day. I wasn't thinking to myself, oh my gosh, my dad's crying. I was thinking, oh my gosh.
It's like, okay to be strong.
Yeah, and I don't know that I definitely didn't have the words that I would today of being like, oh my gosh, that was the love that he had for this incredible woman. I mean, she was saintly, and you know, she was like 4'10" my entire life. I don't remember her in any other form other than like Yoda, right? And I remember one day he was like going through a box of pictures.
Grandma Yoda.
Yeah.
I love it.
She was so amazing. And he pulled out this picture, you know, because we have the stations of people's lives, right? And they have their childhood, and then they have like, you know, marriage and children, and then they get older. And, you know, as a 17-year-old with a grandmother died at 94, I had her for, you know, maybe 10, 12 years of my memory.
Right.
And I remember he pulled out a photograph, and I was like, oh, who's that woman? This beautiful woman's like leaning against the Studebaker, you know, some the famous old photo you'd find in a shoebox. And he goes, you don't know who that is? That's your grandmother. And she wasn't 4'10". She didn't look like the sweet little lady that I knew that baked cookies.
Yeah.
But when was your moment that you saw that? And I know that you were raised in by a minister as well, right?
Yes. So my dad was a pastor.
Maybe there was an intersection that was younger for you, but I just think it's solid for our listeners to be looking for those things in their life, whether they're younger or older, and just reflecting back on that positive moment when they were said that was okay. And if it hasn't happened yet, just know that it still can and it's all right.
Yeah. So, probably in my life, you're talking about, I'm gonna make sure I'm understanding the question.
Just seeing someone's vulnerability that you weren't anticipating, something that just moved you as a young individual.
Yeah.
Because you're just such a compassionate individual today, and I'd imagine that just didn't get turned on in your personal career, not your professional career.
My father was, my father cared deeply about people. He wasn't super emotional, but he was the guy that would always show up. My dad was available. He pastored a pretty large church when we were growing up, thousands of people. But if somebody was in the hospital, he'd make it a point. He'd stop by. He may only be there for 5 minutes, but he'd stop by. And he'd make sure that they knew that he cared. And I remember one time going to the hospital with him, and we were just, I mean, it was like touch and goes. I mean, it was like when you're flying a plane and your wheels barely land, and then you're back up in the air and you're flying. And I said, I said to him, I was probably in high school at the time, and I said, well, why would we say so? It's a short time. He goes, I just can only give what I can give, but I make sure that I give what I can give.
Wow, that's
and
beautiful.
So I learned from him the power of presence, that nothing replaces showing up and being there. And but probably when it comes to just seeing people be vulnerable and compassionate, I had a youth pastor that was like that. His name was Ken Sevier. He would cry at the drop of a hat. And he had rough edges and wasn't perfect, but Ken would stay for a long time. Ken would be the guy that would, he was in his late 40s, early 50s, hanging out with teenagers as a youth pastor, but he just had a way of connecting. He had a way of putting his finger in your chest and saying, hey, God's got a plan for your life. Don't miss it. You've got potential. And with tears in his eyes, he would say that. Oh. And so I would say a lot of that compassion and a lot of the willingness to be vulnerable would come from Ken Sevier and my dad, the combination of the two.
Right. And being ever available.
Being available and being present, both physically and emotionally. And I just think from a young age, I've always kind of been that person that when people were in trouble, they came to. I don't know why. It wasn't like I had this abundance of wisdom. I think it was more about I just cared. And somebody described me the other day, a guy that I worked with, he said, hey, you know what? The best thing I can think of is the statement that Jesus made. He said, to rejoice with those who rejoice and to weep with those who weep. And he said, that's kind of who Ryan. And he referred to that to me and my wife, Janice. That's just who they are. They rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And to me, that means to be emotionally present with the people you're with. And you have to show up.
Right.
You have to be willing. You have to be willing to rejoice and not compare someone else's victory to maybe what you don't have. You have to be willing.
We live in a big measuring stick.
Big measuring stick.
Right? Like, oh, yeah. Do I measure up? And you're just saying, hey, if not just being there, but being available while you're there, whatever that time frame is.
And celebrating with people that are celebrating.
Yeah.
And if they're sad, be sad with them. And not that you own their grief, but that you're present with them in their grief and you can support them.
Yeah. I'm okay with sharing in your burden. Yes. The time that we get to spend together.
Yes.
Yeah. I mentioned that because I sent you that song earlier
yes.
today.
Good song.
Grief is Only Love. It's by this, he's not a new artist. He's a new artist to me. His name's yeah. Stephen Wilson Jr. And I had heard one of his songs. I mentioned that to you
it's
earlier.
Grief is Only Love with Nowhere to Land or
with
something?
With Nowhere to Go.
Nowhere to Go.
Yeah. And I just.
What a great concept.
I was working out in the garage, hanging out with my daughter. We were having, you know, just the best time. And it was time to clean up for the next thing. And I remember I came upstairs. And this was me likening that experience potentially, my daughter being 12 years old. And I was up in her house and getting cleaned up after workout. And I had come out of the bathroom. My daughter looked at me and I'd only heard this guy's one song. And I started listening to the album. And that song came on.
Hmm.
I'm in there just getting clean for the next whatever was coming next. I don't even remember. And that song just came over me like a wave. And I just found myself in tears. And I was like, oh, man. I guess I needed this right now.
Yeah.
This guy was just speaking to my soul, which I thought was beautiful. And my daughter came by as I was walking through the house and she said, are you okay, Dad? And I said, yeah, that was just, I got to play it for you, Audrey. It's just the most beautiful song, right? And I love the fact that I'm able to share that level of, hey, this is okay. And
yeah.
that's what she's seeing
yeah.
at 12 years old is, you know, this, super imperfect individual.
I love the fact that you just leaned into that.
Oh, right.
That you didn't, I mean, honestly, that you didn't just resist those emotions and say, well, that's silly. This is just a song and I'm getting ready. You lean into it and say,
yeah.
hey, I'm going to be present in this emotion right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to experience it fully. And that's a beautiful, and then when your daughter said, are you okay? You're like, yeah, I'm good.
I just had this great cry over this song. And she was like, well, okay. Well, I guess that's
yeah.
who my dad is. And I, you know, so my next move was send this to Dad, Mom,
mm-hmm.
David, Andrew, and my sister. I'm like, hey, you guys need to listen to this song today
yeah.
and, you know, check in with them and see how their experience was as we all have our shared grief. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, every single time we have an opportunity to be vulnerable and to feel
yeah.
our person and our loss, we're like, hey, let's share. That's that back to that togetherness,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I don't, whenever I get to have those waves of emotion, I'm like, well, this isn't just for me.
Right.
need them, whole family back in the Midwest to say, oh, Nick's having some feelings today, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you know me professionally, it's always Nicholas, but
okay.
My family has never called me that. They
so
gave
you're
me,
Nick?
Yeah,
they
gave me a three-syllable name, which I go by professionally or personally.
Yes, yes.
But back home, I've never been called that name.
Wow,
so.
I didn't know that. Learning new things every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, right.
So here's the deal. You know, what you just said is togetherness, one of the two most powerful words in the human language. My wife says this all the time, are me too. I miss them.
That.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm hurting today. Me too. And it's not that misery loves company.
Right.
It's that there's something healthy about being together with whatever emotion. I am so excited for this day. Me too. I'm so glad that we're going to go on vacation. Me too. There's just something powerful about those words.
Yeah.
Me too. It says we're in this together. And we miss that today.
Yeah.
Facebook doesn't say me too. I mean,
not the button. A button to like or approve. No,
it just doesn't do it. Even if you get the little heart thing going on, it just doesn't. Yeah. No, we need to hear those words with each other. We need to be present with each other.
You and Janice are amazing. To know Ryan is to know a great guy. To know his wife is to know a person that made a, you know, outkicked your coverage. She's amazing.
Oh, yeah, I married up. No doubt about it. I married up. No doubt.
Kendall and I, similar thing, and I know I've mentioned it in the past on the podcast, but is if we ever catch ourselves saying we have to do something, is changing it to we get to.
Yeah.
Right, because whatever it is, it's on the path to whatever's next in our life.
Because we all have choices.
We have choices,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know that we're coming closer to the end, and as you've been a spiritual force in my life, and if folks get the chance to tune into this, I know that we've talked about, you know, choice and hope and together. But is there any additional words you want to send those listening out there?
Yeah, I used to have a therapist. He's retired now, so I have to get a new one. But my therapist, as I would leave, would always say these words to me. He would say, be gentle to yourselves. Be gentle to yourself. And I would say to people that are maybe experiencing grief, this is... We just went through Thanksgiving and we're going into Christmas. My father passed away a year ago at this time. And our thing is just be gentle. Don't judge yourself harshly.
Yeah.
Give yourself space. Don't feel pressure to do anything. Remember, you have choices. But the biggest choice is to be gentle. Because honestly, the biggest critic that any of us face is usually ourselves. It's the guy or the woman that's looking you in the mirror. It's the voices that are coming from between your ears more than the voices that are coming into your ears that really do us in.
Right.
And if we would just stop sometimes and ask ourselves the things we say to ourselves, would you ever say that to someone else? And if you wouldn't, then don't say it to yourself. Be gentle. Be gentle with yourselves. And I would give that.
I love it. Well, I hope our listeners out there will be gentle. I hope they'll look for choices, and those choices will bring them hope.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful to have Ryan Wright, our guest, as we bring back Guiding Grief Podcast to the KCAT platform and our community.
And Nicholas, let me say thank you for having me. It's been a joy. Oh. It always is great to get together with you. And I love that you're doing this, that it's just beyond the basic of, hey, we're here to help you do a funeral, but we're here to help you do grief. And life is full of grief, and that's okay. We can lean into it. So
well, thanks. Thank you. Thank you to my friend. Thank you to our community. Thank you to KCAT. If you didn't write that down, it is Stephen Wilson Jr. If you're driving, pull over, have yourself a good cry.
Right.
A big thank you again to our sponsors, Darling Fisher and Los Gatos Memorial Park. This is the Guiding Grief Podcast. My name's Nicholas. This is Ryan Wright, and we are so grateful that you tuned in to listen to us today. And from my heart to yours, take care. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Guiding Grief Podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Welsenbach. Grief is a profound experience, but you're not alone. Let's continue to navigate this journey together. If you have any thoughts, questions, or topics you'd like us to explore, reach out. Until next time, be kind to yourself, find strength in your resilience, and always hold on to hope. Before we end, I'd like to give a quick thank you to KCAT TV for producing our show. Please remember, be good to one another.